been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.
Welcome to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting live every Thursday. We are in the Woodlands Chamber of Commerce right here on a gorgeous day looking out over the water. JJ, thanks for inviting us in. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks for letting me be here. I always appreciate it.
Yeah, JJ's our co-host, and then our special guest today is Dave Roberts of Telegistics. And Dave, thanks for coming out.
Thanks for having me.
Yep, we're going to do a actually, we think we have a lot to learn from you about entrepreneurship, because not only have you built numerous businesses, but you have a heart and a mission and a book for entrepreneurs that actually had a chance to get into a little bit here called Unemployable. So that's exciting. We're excited to hear about that. Before we get into the deep dive, Dave, of your story, JJ, could you bring us up to speed a little bit about what's new, what's upcoming, and what's going on around the Chamber of Commerce?
Sure. We've got a little event happening tomorrow at the Woodlands Waterway Marriott. It is our Economic Outlook Conference. It starts at 7:30 in the morning. We have Heidi Cruz, an economist from Goldman Sachs, who also happens to be married to our U.S. Senator Ted Cruz. We have the state comptroller, Glenn Hagar, will be there. He'll be our luncheon keynote. This is all sponsored by the Woodlands Area Economic Development Partnership and Cypress Brook and Stibbs & Company. So we have a lot of good sponsors, a lot of good speakers lined up for the morning all the way through lunch.
Yeah, I wanted to come to that, but going to miss that. Got some family things going on that I told you about.
We'll miss you.
Yeah, that's when you say little event, that's not, it's actually no little thing. That's
we'll have about 700 plus attendees. Every year we do this early in the year to kind of get an idea of what the economy is going to do. And of course, the big talk is all about oil and also healthcare. And so we'll get a national macro look, we'll get a state look, we'll get a local look. We have Gordy Bunch, who's the chairman of the Woodlands Township, is going to be there. Gil Staley is going to give a talk on the local economy. So we have a lot of good speakers.
Yeah, and there's a lot of good things going on right now in the new Trump presidency. And, you know, boy, yep. he's taking action mighty fast, isn't he?
Very.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Dave?
Oh, I love all the activity that's going on right now. It looks like he just jumped in with both feet, so that's awesome.
Yeah, don't worry about us being politically correct here. You know, we're not afraid to come. Hey, we're you know what? JJ's an advocate for several thousand business owners in the area.
Definitely.
And you know, you look at one of the things Trump's talked about is reducing regulation by 75%. We ask our guest on the Shrimp Tank tomorrow, and called you tomorrow, and said, "What can I do? What can the federal government do to help you, Mr. Small Business Owners?" Most people say, "Hey, just get out of my life a little bit, get out of my way. Let me run my business." And you look back over the last 7-8 years, the fastest growing industry in the United States was the federal government. And so,
number one employer in the country.
Number one, is it? Number one?
I believe it's the number one. That employs the most people in the U.S. Is that right?
Well, that's why D.C. is the fastest growing city, because all the growth of government employees.
Yeah.
I think that we're going to see a massive reversal of that, and I think that if you're a business owner, you're going to be happy about that, and you're going to watch these regulations peel back. You're going to watch this economic, you know, engine fire off. So I think about the first president I voted for in 1980, Ronald Reagan, and after he came in from the malaise of Jimmy Carter and the wave of economic prosperity that followed that, gets me really excited about what's possible. So anyway, with that in mind, I want to give a shout out to Sam Houston State University Entrepreneurship Degree Program. I would like to shout out to Jamie Collins, the Director of Entrepreneurship there, and then also my co-host, Dr. John Newbold, who was, Catherine, he's not with us today, but he's coming on the next show, right? We're going to see him broadcasting at our next show over at the Bob Milner at Mercedes-Benz of the Woodlands is gracious enough to host the podcast over or his show. And then also, hey, when are we going to see Chip Matthews again? I've been telling Chip, yeah, I said, we got to have Chip back on the show. So Anyway, let's get into our guest a little bit and talk about Telegistics, Dave Roberts, and maybe Dave, start us off. Just tell us a little bit about you and your company.
Well, Telegistics was we will celebrate our 20th anniversary next month, and Telegistics was started with an idea, $1,000. In fact, just to tell you, Dan, how cheap I am, when we went to look for office space when I was starting it, we talked somebody into actually, I thought the executive suites were too expensive, and he ended up renting us a closet for $99 a month, and just enough to put two folding metal chairs and a metal card table. And we were in a closet with the phone equipment for the building. You could actually hear the phone equipment actually click on and off, and so that was our humble beginnings.
I love it. You know what? You hear about people start this business. I started in the garage, in my back room, in a spare bedroom. You started off in a closet.
That's the first one as a first one in the closet.
And he's out of the closet now.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say anything. But yeah.
Well, the proprietor of the building, when I asked him about that, I said, well, I pointed to his closet because the door was open, and I didn't know actually it was a closet at the time. And I said, well, is that available? And he looked at me and goes, well, that's our phone equipment room, or what in the telecom industry is called our DMARC. And I said, you want to rent that? And I said, well, how much? And he goes, and he really thought I was kidding. And he says, $99 a month. And I said, I'll take it. And so that's how we got started.
That's a contract.
Yep.
I love that. And that's why when you build a business like that and you have those memories that other people don't have, it's your baby. And now you've taken this business to the point of traction. You've really... I've got a lot going on with that business, but also you have a heart for entrepreneurs, and it looks to me like you're a teacher. I mean, this book that you wrote, and I saw the forward that it was to your kids, and I think, you know, maybe communicating some life lessons, putting that in writing. But the book is titled Unemployable, How to Be Successfully Unemployed the Rest of Your Life. Tell us a little bit about what motivated you, Dave, to write Unemployable.
Well, I've written other books. They've been in a different genre. I love to write political thrillers, and I've had some success with that. But my youngest son, who was at the time he was in business school at Texas A&M, my kids got together with me one night at dinner and said, Dad, you know, especially him, he said that, you know, I hear all these things in business school, but I never hear anybody talk about business like you do. None of the professors, none of the classes that I'm taking. And he says, you know, you really should write a book. I know you like to write books, but you should write a book about business and about the experiences and the things that you tell us even over dinner. And so that was the impetus. That's how it got started. That was the motivation to do it, and that's how we started.
Now, you're a take-action guy because in college, you were learning from textbooks, and you were discouraged or disappointed in that. And you were motivated. You said, hey, I don't have time to wait on that. You jumped on out there and... because, you know, I think we're probably close to the same age. Back then, they didn't have entrepreneurship degree programs at the universities. And earlier, we were talking about all of the schools that do. I think U of H was a big pioneer in that. But now Baylor, Sam Houston, a lot of these other schools are saying, hey, this is the wave. And so I think you saw that maybe at the beginning.
Well, I did. And I got to be honest, when I went to college I thought I was going to school to learn how to make money. I really did. I saw my dad grew up in a corporate environment. I knew I didn't want that. I knew I always wanted to be in business for myself. And so I went to school, went to college, and I'm listening to, you know, history and algebra and all these great things. And I'm like, when is somebody going to teach me how to make money? And so I used to sneak into an economics class that I wasn't registered for just to listen.
By the way, if you just tuned in, you're listening to the Shrimp Tank podcast, where we interview Houston's best and brightest entrepreneurs. We're in the studio today with Dave Roberts of Telegistics and J.J. Hawley, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, and we're doing a deep dive on entrepreneurship. And don't forget, you'll be able to download a complete replay of this show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. Don't forget that all of our shows are on iTunes. So that's great to know, Dave, that you were a thought leader early on, not only for yourself, but for other people as you got your company Telegistics started. And that, the Telegistics was 20 years ago you began?
Yeah, 20 years ago. Started 20 years ago. It wasn't the first business I started, and it wasn't the only successful business I had started. I had actually started a couple other businesses and sold them. I had one spectacular failure, which I think you talk to any entrepreneur, they're going to have some failures. I had a fairly spectacular one in my mid-20s, and so, you know, lessons learned.
Well, we interview entrepreneurs, and usually they're being interviewed to some degree about their success, but when I ask them about their success, they're quick to tell me about the setbacks, heartaches along the way. And so if you're listening, you're thinking, I want to be an entrepreneur one day, you better have a little grit. And, you know, you better maybe take a little journey into self first, because not everybody's cut out for it.
No, and that's okay. I mean, I tell people all the time, because I get asked if entrepreneurs are made or born, and I think that they're not born that way. I think you get some personality traits that may help you, but I've seen all different types of personalities be successful in business and in entrepreneurship. So I really think it's about what your dreams and goals are.
So JJ, you work alongside so many business owners here. What mm-hmm. are some of the common traits that you see of business owners that actually make it? Because, you know, what are the statistics that half of the businesses that start don't make it for the first 5 years? You rub mm-hmm. elbows with a lot of successful people. What are some common traits that you pick up on?
One of the things that we see, and I think Dave hit the nail on the head, it's the resilience and being able to jump back in from a failure. The other is that I see a lot of very energetic, very smart people that start a business, and they're great at the product of the business, but not so good at the management of the business, how to market themselves, how to get involved. And talk to me a little bit about how you would counsel a person starting a business today, and great product, but how do they run the entire operation?
Well, I get asked a lot about, you know, what these businesses you talk about, that a lot of them fail. Mm-hmm. And there's a pretty common, very common themes in why entrepreneurship, if they're not successful, simple things like not really knowing what the cost of the product or services that you provide, so therefore not knowing how to price it correctly.
Mm-hmm. You lose money on one, make it up on volume.
Right, exactly. And really, I mean, just not knowing what it costs for them mm-hmm. to provide the product or service. And then another one is thinking that they have to be the cheapest product or service that's in their market. Telelogistics, for example, we are not the cheapest at what we do, and we brag on that. We consider ourselves a platinum level provider of the services that we did, and we're very proud of that fact.
It's about value.
It is about value. Yeah. So those are some of the things with entrepreneurship, and the thing that sunk me on the first failure that I had was being financially illiterate, and I talk a lot about that in that book. Because it's so important. We were making a lot of money very quickly in that business back in the first oil boom in Houston,
yep.
and thought it would never end. And then when things tightened up, because I did not have the financial literacy behind me, I did not know how to handle that situation.
Well, and that's one of the points I was very interested in, was you dropped out of college because you weren't learning the real skills that you needed to learn to make a business successful. And now you're going back to some universities and helping them to incorporate some of that real world lessons into their academia.
You know, my kids all went to college, and it's one of the biggest regrets that I have, that I didn't finish college. I will tell, and Dan's right about this when he spoke about, had one of these entrepreneurship programs, degree paths would have been available to me, I'd have been a college graduate. Mm-hmm. But I didn't feel like I was learning how to make money. I didn't feel like I didn't go to college to learn how to get a job. Which is what most people do.
That was
not my goal, and I got very discouraged and went off and dropped out.
So, Dave, you have a chapter in your book that starts off. It says you can't push a wet noodle. What does that mean? That got my attention.
That's my way of saying, this is one of the things that my son Tanner was talking about. He says, you know, Dad, nobody ever. I don't hear anybody else say these kind of things. I said, you can't. To me, you can't push a wet noodle. You can't motivate other people. You can only motivate yourself. Now, you can lead people, and hopefully that'll motivate them. But I've learned with dealing with employees, with entrepreneurs, they're either motivated or they're not. You can give them the tools and try to lead them. But at the end of the day, somebody starting a business for themselves, they have to be motivated on their own.
I would agree with that. What do you think about that, JJ?
I agree. How many employees does Telelogistics have?
Right at 50.
Yeah. So that's one thing as a in a leadership position of the chamber, that is very important to me is our culture and how we motivate employees and encourage them and make sure that they are doing valuable work. What are some things that you do to help your employees to understand, to lead them so they're motivated to do what they need to do to make the business successful?
Well, I think that the culture that you develop in any company is critically important. And fortunately, I mean, we've learned the hard way, but we have developed a culture where we have employees that actually participate. We save money for our clients, and we get bonus from those clients based on the money that we save, and so we drive things that we motivate them that drives that behavior. So our employees are not they have a salary, of course, but they have the ability at any month to make bonuses based on how much money they save our clients. We also have a bell in our office. It's a bell that. When we somebody hits a certain level, we save over $1,000, or we get $1,000 back for a client, then they go ring the bell.
So I like it.
Yeah, that's neat.
Yeah, and then we do monthly awards. Mm-hmm. I'm really big on making sure that employees are recognized, and they recognize publicly. So we do a once a month meeting, and we give out trophies. For the person that got the biggest of what we call ROI, return on investment, for our client, and so that culture is what drives our success.
I love that, because I've always believed that you build your people will build your business, and without them, you know, you're one guy, and one's a very small number. I know in our practice, there's just not much I can do on my own. That I have to attract, find, hire, and keep good people. So can you share with our listeners, you may be a small business, you may have one employee, you may have 50 employees, but after you've been doing this a while, there's some things you pick up along the way about how to find and keep the right people, and I'd be really interested to hear what you have to say about that.
There's two things, and there's two things that I look for and I think we've carried this forward throughout our organization, but the two things that I look for in people, and really to the most important traits for entrepreneurs to be successful are pretty much the same. One is the ability to relate to all kinds of people. So if an employee can't get along with fellow employees, the ability to relate to people and get along is extremely important. We've made some mistakes and hired some people that can't get along with folks, and so.
And I'm glad to hear you say that, yeah. Dave, because we talk about that with our staff as well. We're going to spend a lot of time together. Let's like each other and let's get along and have fun while we're doing it.
And then the second most important one to me is the ability to solve problems.
Yeah.
We created a culture very, very quickly. I'll be politically incorrect here for a minute. It got to a point when, as we hired people, then people basically would come to my office and want to throw up on me.
Yeah.
And basically, I can only take so much of that a day. So we made a rule that if you have a problem, you can come see your supervisor, you can come see me, you can come see other leaders in the company. But when you come with a problem, you better have a suggested solution.
That's right.
It may not be the right solution, but we want you to have thought through that and offer a solution for it, and then we can talk about it.
This is a man after my own heart. In my own business, I talk about two kinds of people. One is a problem identifier, and the other is a problem solver. And the stock price of the problem solver is much greater than the problem identifier. And working closely together, you find out who those toxic personalities are. Because like JJ said, we spend a lot of time together. And you know what? Hey, I got to tell you, I'll be honest, some of the worst hires I've ever made were some of the best interviews. Man, they did great in the interview. They were like, I was like, oh, this person's awesome. I bring them in and 3 months later, you know what you got. And
that's correct.
So I believe, that you got to find, keep, and attract. You don't always get it right at the first time. Maybe make the idea about being slow to hire, quick to fire.
Well, and that is... It's in the book, but that's my number one rule. And where we've been burnt is, my number one rule is, and all my management employees know this, is the very instant, the very nanosecond that we've determined that we've made a bad hire, you end it.
Yeah.
Don't linger around.
As quickly as you can, because every time that we've tried to rehabilitate someone or you know, try to fix their personality or do whatever it is that to fix them, it ends up costing us more in the long. It may alienate a customer. It may alienate other employees. But you know when, you know, other business owners, they know when they made a bad hire, but nobody likes to fire anybody. No. I hate firing people. No. Yeah. So,
but you,
so
gotta,
you put
as
that
a leader,
on.
You got to do it you sometimes. Do it. One of my friends and mentors, Todd Duncan, said the most biggest expense you'll have in your business is the time that you've given up on somebody, and then the time between that and the time that you do something about it. Producer tells me that we need to run to a commercial break. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting live from the Woodlands Area Chamber of Commerce. Don't go away. We've got a lot more. Is your company overpaying for telecom services? Do you even know if you're overpaying? Most mid-market to larger enterprises overpay by 23% their telecom services. Telogistics has a 20-year proven track record of helping bring hard-earned dollar savings back to their clients' bottom line. Whether you're a company that offers wireless devices to employees, needs help negotiating contracts with telecom carriers, or simply wants an audit of telecom bills, Telogistics is your trusted partner. Visit telogistics.com for more information, where you can also request a demo. And we are back on a lovely January, beautiful day, looking out over the beautiful Lake Woodlands. No eagles soaring, right? No, I know what's behind me, Catherine. I have my back to the window, but I know what's back there. Our esteemed co-host and our guest, Mr. Dave Roberts, they're enjoying the nice view. But
yeah, no eagles yet today. I don't see any.
But, you know, we do have eagles right here in the Woodlands.
Yes,
and,
we do.
You know, we got some eagles soaring around the Chamber of Commerce and at the university. And I'm sure there's some in Telogistics. And so now, Dave, we're talking about maybe some building blocks about, you know, building your company. But I want to get into learn a little bit more about some of your endeavors. Tell us about the Renegade Capitalist.
Well, this goes along with the entrepreneurship, trying to help. I have a very big affinity for startup businesses, only because I know how, you know, I've done quite a few of them. I know what the challenges are for most. And so I like to help entrepreneurs get started. If they have an idea, if they have a product, service, invention, those type of things. So we started that with the idea that it would also be some investment opportunities for us, but to help the entrepreneurs. And so the Renegade Capitalist, we actually have a contest going on, a $25,000 business plan contest going on right now. We're getting business plans for all over the country, and we're going to invest $25,000 in somebody. So, you know, unfortunately, I'm hoping that with this broadcast today that we get some more locally, because most of these are coming from all over the country but Houston.
Well, tell us a little bit more about that, you know, how someone submits an entry and, you know, when the selection's made, and tell us a little bit more.
They can go to renegadecapitalist.com and submit a business plan. And let me say something about the business plans, too. We're not asking for a 400-page business plan. We have a set of about 12 or 15 questions that we can look at, and I can determine whether it's something that we're interested in pursuing. So, you know, and we're getting some really interesting submissions, but we haven't picked a winner yet, and this will be open till the end of February, I believe, and we will, you know, encourage submissions, and we're going to make a $25,000 investment in someone.
Okay, now do you take an equity stake in these companies oftentimes?
Oftentimes, but that's negotiable. You know, every deal is a little different, has a little different flavor to it, so depending on who's involved and what's involved. And some of these, that's not where our investment stopped. We started with that, or, you know, we bring them some equity capital from other sources and through some of the contacts that I've had over the years. One of the things that we did at Logistics, I got a lot of experiences, so we did a private funding memorandum. We raised almost $4 million after being in business for a couple of years. So I went through that process. I know what that's like. And so there's a lot of things that we can bring to the table to help a company get to the next level.
Man, that's awesome. So have you assembled a team with that? Is it just you yourself? Or
It's just us ourselves. And then I have a close network of friends who, you know, if I bring them an investment they like, they'll invest in it and so forth. So it's somewhat informal, but it's through the contacts that I've developed over the years.
Okay. It sounds like it's a little bit like your own little angel group.
It pretty much is, exactly.
Yeah, angel investing. And so Yeah, it's exciting to hear those bright ideas that come in. How do people learn about the Renegade Capitalist, and how do you get the word out on that?
Well, the book is helping. We're on a nationwide book tour with the book right now, and the Unemployable, that's what's really driving it. Is the book tour is pointing people to the website, and then we're getting submissions from that.
In the book, you talked about DNA, and is that a self assessment and going, hey, am I right for this? Am I the right kind of person to be an entrepreneur?
Yeah, I think there's some misnomers about what actually the makeup of an entrepreneur is. And I mentioned earlier, I see all different personality types. And most people think it's a type A type, you know, personality, or somebody that's a very good salesperson. And really, not necessarily. And I also don't know if entrepreneurs are born. I think that my drive to become an entrepreneur was driven by the fact I grew up in a corporate family, and I saw the sacrifices that my stepfather made, living where he didn't want to live, somebody controlling his vacations, his income, even their social life to some degree because of his corporate responsibility was driven by that. And I had the fortune of having some of my best friends whose couple dads were home builders and had some other businesses. Their lifestyle was always a little different than ours. And I'm not so much talking about the material things, although those kind of things do come into play, but they just seem to have more freedom than we did. And so I think from a very young age, 8, 10 years old, I think that was ingrained on me. I've never wanted to do anything else.
So Dave, what would be your advice if someone was, they felt like they were stuck on that corporate treadmill, really wanted to get out, but were afraid of the insecurity or leaving the security of a corporate environment? And you talk about in your book about it being the best time in history to start a business. So how would they make that leap?
Well, first, I think it's the best time in history to start a business because of connectivity and technology that's available. You can literally have customers all over the world, depending on what kind of business that you have, and never leave your kitchen table. So I think that the number one reason most people don't go off on their own when they really want to is they're somewhat risk averse. So I always walk people through a scenario. Well, okay, so what is it you like to do? And now, not everybody can make a business out of their hobbies or their likes, but that's where I start. What do you like to do? Is there a way to monetize that? Is there a business in that? Or how would you do it better? I always, I don't know about you guys. I'm sure you're like I am. I walk into a business or restaurant, and I'm already de-engineering it when I'm in there. I'm like, okay, what's the revenue in here? How are they making money? And I'm always trying to figure out, how they make money in that particular business. So with somebody starting off, if they're risk adverse, too, is start off part time. Find a business that you can do part time that you don't have to leave your job, so that you're not taking that leap of faith or a jump off with your life savings.
Good advice,
right?
Good advice. And we've seen many entrepreneurs hatch their business that way. And we look at some of the great companies in America today. They started that way, and like you might have started in the closet, right?
Right, right, yeah. Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. So I noticed in your bio that you have 4 kids, and I'm guessing that maybe some of them fit into that millennial bracket somewhere age-wise. What would you say to millennials that, when they think about carving out a life and business and the possibility of being an entrepreneur, what's your words of wisdom towards millennials?
Well, I love millennials because a lot of the accepted norms that I grew up with and that you're seeing of folks, I'm 57, so I actually just turned 58. So a lot of the type of restrictions that, your thought process you had as you're growing up with millennials aren't there. And I'll give you a couple examples, and I have a lot of examples of this in the book, is I find a lot of millennials willing to do or participate in what I call the gig economy, where they may do 2 or 3 different things to earn money just so they can have their freedom and not be stuck in a cubicle 8 to 5 every day. So, and they're happy that way. It's not necessarily, again, it's not about material things. It's all about freedom and being able to do the things they want to do. They could drive an Uber, give guitar lessons at night, but it gives them the freedom, flexibility to do the things that are important to them. So that's one of the things that I've seen with a lot of millennials is they are... They're not encumbered by what we think is the social norms of how somebody's supposed to act as far as getting a job.
Well, and that's interesting. In our generation, it was all about what is your salary going to be?
Right.
Not what's your life satisfaction going to be. I mean, right. my My dad was a sharecropper and picked cotton since he could walk. And I would talk to him about, you know, not really sure I'm real happy in this, you know, job. I may look for something different. And he's like, well, you ought to try picking cotton and see how happy you are. I mean,
you know, yeah. I think millennials get beat over the head quite a bit, you know, yeah. with these stereotypes and, you know, people characterize them as narcissistic and, you know, I'm smoking pot in my parents' basement and, you know, I'm just a me and all of this. But, you know, those stereotypes are rarely correct. There's a lot of really nice qualities. You talked about things that they value. They're generous.
We have some millennials here on staff, and it's not about the dollars, although that's important, but it's about, am I adding value? Am I enjoying what I'm doing? And frankly, in a country that we work the most hours a week of any country in the world, we could probably, you know, have a little bit better balance on that. I mean, and balance, I think, is the key. You can't go too far to the other side.
Yeah, I know when I go skiing, I meet these Europeans, and they're like, I'm out here for 2 weeks, 3 weeks.
Really?
And I'm going, really? I'm here for 3 nights, and I got to get back on the...
Yeah, I don't have time to talk to you. I got to hit the run.
I got
to
get on the hamster wheel.
I know. I got clients in France, Dan, and everybody's on holiday all the time.
Yeah.
You can't even get a consensus meeting together because you can't pull all the people that need to be in the meeting.
How do they work? I'm like, what in the world? And I watch the Tour de France every year, and these people are taking the entire month of July off, and I'm like, I barely have time to watch it on TV.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there is, there's I think, some nice quality. And at the end of the day, I want to say this about millennials. Mm-hmm. Okay, look, who are they really anyway? They're our kids, they're our grandkids, they're people that we love and care about, and they're the ones that we need to bring into the conversation about carving out the life that you want, and if that's through entrepreneurship, then, and believe me, there's plenty of people that make it in the corporate setting too, and that's not necessarily...
Well, and they're going to be the majority of workers.
Hey,
right,
they're our future, so I think that we should start bringing them into more of these conversations and investing in them. Producer tells me we need to go to another commercial break. You're listening to the Shrimp Tank Podcast, broadcasting live from the Chamber of Commerce right here in the Woodlands. I'm your host, Daniel Goodwin. Joining me in the studio today is Mr. J.J. Hawley and our special guest, Dave Roberts of Telegistics. You can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com and on iTunes. We'll be right back. According to a recent Forbes business article, 9 out of 10 business owners are overpaying their taxes. Ouch! Contact the team at Provident and explore how you can pay only what you are legally, morally, and ethically required to pay. After a simple 15-minute no-obligation assessment, we'll determine if we can substantially reduce your tax burden. If so, we'll develop a tax savings plan utilizing our exclusive tax blueprint. Visit us online at ProvidentWealthLLC.com. Or reach out to our office anytime, 281-466-4843. And we are back in the beautiful Chamber of Commerce. JJ, this isn't the boardroom. What do you call this room?
Well, this is the Mitchell Room, named after Mr. George P. Mitchell, our founder of the Woodlands.
You know what? Picture of George hanging on the wall here.
Yep.
What a visionary. You know, we talk about business entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes that begins with a vision. In fact, maybe that's a great segue into just talking about vision and maybe some of your comments on that, Dave.
Well, I think that history shows that, you know, the dreamers, and I would consider myself a dreamer. I think the difference between being a dreamer and being an entrepreneur is that entrepreneurs actually act on those dreams. So somebody told me once, and I've copied it, is that, you know, entrepreneurship is really just bringing value to an idea. So people have the vision to do it and act on it. Those are the entrepreneurs.
Yeah, you know, you can stay at home and study and get stuck in the paralysis of analysis forever, but there is this thing called, you know, do it. And sometimes it can be a little bit of a fire aim ready. You know, I mean, I believe in being prepared and have a business plan, but that can go to an extreme also where you're stuck in neutral. So, you know, if you're listening, you're an aspiring entrepreneur, maybe you're seasoned, you've found traction, you're ready to go to that next level. There's nothing quite like taking actions. And man, are we seeing our new president take some big time action, you know, right off the board?
Just a couple of things.
Right? And does the guy sleep?
I was wondering about that.
I mean, I think outsources it, right?
Yeah, what are the hours a day that Trump is putting in right now? But maybe 20, 22, something like that? That'd be crazy.
Look at somebody like Trump. I think they get the most out of the hours that they do use.
Yeah.
So, that's smart. Let's talk about work ethic because, you know, it could be said, I think, that he just outworked Hillary. You know, he worked. He outworked everybody around him. I that guy's stamina is unbelievable.
And he's 70 years old.
And I think, you know, all that maybe starts with his passion, motivation. These are key.
I thought you were going to say hair.
Yeah, well, you know, we have some intrigue with the Donald's hair, too, that's going to be fun watching him.
Yeah, it's got its own Twitter account.
Well, we got Fox News on right now, and we're looking at the new Air Force One.
They're in fact, they're arriving in Philadelphia at the congressional retreat where our esteemed Honorable Congressman Kevin Brady is, you know, our House Ways and Means Committee Chairman. And by the way, he'll be at the Economic Outlook Conference tomorrow as well.
Sure. So shout out to Kevin Brady, you know, our own Woodlands right here. So back to Dave. Tell us a little bit about a couple of the key skills you think are common for entrepreneurs that are key skills that, you know, you must have. If you don't have these going for you, you should probably go get a J-O-B somewhere.
Absolutely, persistence is got to be at the top of the list. Because you are going to fail, you are going to make mistakes, and you just can't give up. And so, you know, the book, I wrote that book for people that have that deep down gut burn, that want to be in business for themselves. And so there are people, I think, like me, that I would rather live on a dirt floor and eat beans than have a job. So I think persistence is... it's got to be number one on the list.
You know, and one thing you aren't saying anything about is age. Entrepreneurs come in all shapes and sizes, socioeconomic backgrounds. Can be 18, 15. We've got businesses that were started by guys that were retired.
Right.
We help them out all that we can, and I think it's neat to see that energy.
Yeah, age and circumstances, because a lot of the people that have come to me, we see it all the time, they may have never thought about being in business for themselves, and then all of a sudden something happened in their life. And most common is they were overlooked for a promotion, they got downsized, they lost their job, and, you know, things like there's a medical issue in their family, or they're just simply not making their ends meet, so they got to do something. And so sometimes the necessity is the mother of invention, right? So with nowhere else to turn, they start thinking about being in business for themselves. And that can come in all ages. Mm-hmm. All ages, I've seen it.
Yeah, so Dave's talking about this watershed moment where it just slaps you upside the head. We had a guest said that in his corporate job, he was forced to miss his son's confirmation or something like that. And he came home and he told his wife, that's it. Okay, and after, you know, then that began the process. He did some research. He started a printing company. He's got 4 printing locations now, doing great. He's an entrepreneur. He loves his life. Now, with that, you gotta know you're probably gonna work maybe twice as much as you did when you had the JOB, because it's, you gotta want that.
At least you can do it at midnight and maybe not at 2 o'clock in the afternoon whenever you've got a family event and work around it.
And I steer people too. You know, sometimes people come to me and they want to do something, but they just don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So I think sometimes for those people, franchises are a great thing to look at, because they have a proven system. All they have to do is plug into that system and work the system from the franchise. And so sometimes that's the answer for people. So I tell people, I said, go next time there's a franchise show in town where they've got 400 franchises out there on the convention floor, go see something that excites you. Go find something that excites you. Then you have a way to do a business and you're not reinventing the wheel.
So, Dave, I noticed that you wore shoes in today, and you have a chapter in your book called Bootstrapping. So reconcile that for me. Tell me what's going on. What is bootstrapping?
Bootstrapping is starting a business with virtually no money. I mean, that's essentially, and I use Telegistics as an example. Now, there's not a business that I've started where we had a bucket load of money to start it with. So we got good at finding out how to start a business with them, you know, how to look larger than you are to your potential clients and customers, and bootstrapping on a small budget, because, you know, let's face it. I mean, I was at the emergency room vet a few weeks ago, and it was sad to see people walk in who didn't have the $99 to have their dog or their cat looked at. So, you know, I think somewhere I read the average person has less than $600 in savings. So if that's the case, how in the world are people ever going to start a business for themselves and they don't have any money?
Or what if the refrigerator goes out?
How exactly. They can even, well, people, most people live, devastated. I mean, and unfortunately, for people who have a job, live paycheck to paycheck, and don't have the financial literacy, they're just waiting for the next crisis. And that could be the refrigerator going out, the AC going out, their transmission going out on their car. So just waiting for the next crisis. And that's something that actually terrified me and was a big... Because I saw my parents go through that, and every time we had a mini financial crisis, it was absolute chaos at our home.
So we're talking about some American financial dysfunction that may prohibit someone from actually starting a business. And I know that you wrote a chapter about being financially literate, that you have to understand basic key concepts, precepts about money and how that works. But, you know, an observation I've had here is that has to do with immigrants. You know, look at so many immigrants come to this country, and they may not even speak the language. They may have the shirt on their back. If anybody's at a disadvantage, it's them. But you know what? They'll do what it takes. They'll live eight in an apartment, sleep on the floor, do whatever. They're going to save their money. They're going to, buy oatmeal in a 50-pound sack or what have you. But they're going to, in 5 years, they're going to own a dry clean. They're going to own a business. They're going to own some sort of business or a landscaping company, whatever it is. I have great success for that, and I think that a lot of the Americans. Mindset is more about immediate gratification. What do you think about that?
I do, and I think the one item that will sink folks both financially and trying to start a business is lifestyle. So, and thinking that they deserve a particular lifestyle, or that they want the same lifestyle, for instance, their parents had, that took them 30 or 40 years to build that lifestyle, and then they want it immediately coming out of college. So, I think that. Being financially literate, I mean, we look, JJ, we have people coming that I have to give financial advice to employees because they don't even know how do you go through life through school, and schools don't teach how to balance a checkbook.
Exactly.
Some of the very basic financial, and to be honest with you, I was like that. When I started my business, I had no financial literacy, and eventually was my downfall in that first business. So, and I think in life, if you don't learn some of the basic tenets of handling money, you're going to be doomed.
What are one or two things that would help people along that road to being financially literate?
Don't finance luxuries. Mm-hmm. Don't finance jewelry. Don't finance furniture. Don't finance cars that you can't afford. That would be one. Another one is getting into a house that you can't afford and being house poor. And I've got personal experience from that because I will promise you, when I grew up, my stepdad, there was five of us, five kids. And there was times when I come home from school, like most teenagers do come home from school, open a pantry, refrigerator, and there's nothing in it.
Wow.
We had a great house, really nice house. But you couldn't eat the house. So then this is another thing. I go to my friend's house. The people that had business for themselves, and this is the little things that really I think impacted me. They'd open a refrigerator, and it'd be just there's food in it. I'm like, wow,
cool.
So you spent a lot of time at your friend's house.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, every chance I could get. Yeah. So it's not like it's not that we were poor, but we were. I think that my parents, because of the social aspects of the corporate environment they were in, tried to live above their means. And so every financial crisis, and I love them to death, and very thankful for what they did for me. But there's no doubt that we had some of those issues.
Well, and that's the same for me. My dad was career military, and you don't make a lot of money on an enlisted man's pay. But we always had food in the house. My parents were very financially responsible, and to the point that taught me a lot of lessons. You can't outrun your headlights on that stuff. Keeping up with the Joneses, that type of deal, it just doesn't. I was amazed that when we bought a house recently, and I asked our finance guy or our mortgage guy, just for grins, how much would what's the most I would qualify for a home loan, and it was double what I was really thinking in my head, what I was willing to pay. And I was like, you would let me get into as much trouble as I could, just about. And this is with all the new regulations
and
going
and there's
on.
A synopsis of the financial crisis in 2008.
Yes, it is.
And you know what? The bigger homes got bigger taxes, bigger expenses. And you know what? I got to say, I think to some extent, through some prosperity, that, you know, we made our kids soft a little bit. And maybe there's a quote from Robert Frost that is near and dear to my heart. It said, every affluent father wishes he knew how to give his son the hardships that made him rich. Okay. Mm-hmm. And those hardships are where you get your strength from. And as we draw closing up this interview, it's just been great getting to know more about your story with
David, it's impressive.
Telegistics.
We appreciate you being here. This
is great. Thanks for having me.
But I wanted to ask you for some words of encouragement for that entrepreneur that is looking for some encouragement to get started.
Well, the first thing I think, one of the things that I did, since I couldn't learn any of this in college at the time, look for a mentor or mentors. And there's a chapter in my book called The Great Unpacking, and there's examples of that where I'm sure you know somebody or somebody knows somebody that's in business for themselves. Go pick their brain. Usually what I have found is most entrepreneurs are willing to share their story, share their insights, and try to help you not make the same mistakes that they made. So always go try to seek somebody out as a mentor. And for me, it was more than one person. So go find a mentor.
And a lot of times I've hesitated to ask somebody that I wanted to hear their lessons from because I thought they were too busy. And when you went and kind of reached out and said, hey, I'd like to know more, they were grateful that you asked. And it turned a 30-minute lunch into 2 hours.
Because most of them won't ask. They don't have the gumption to come ask you.
Exactly.
And I'm actually, you know, mentoring a young man now that I don't know where he came flying in out of the internet or whatever, but mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I'll talk to you. Come on in. I met the guy up there on a Saturday, coached him for like 2 hours.
Well, one of the things where, you know, we have a young professionals network, a team in the chamber, and we're looking at ways we can pair them with our 40 past chairman of the chamber, because there's a lot of lessons, a lot of history there that somebody that's 25 that's just moved to the Woodlands doesn't know, and a lot of business lessons that they can learn.
Okay, so the words of wisdom on that topic from J.J. Hawley and from Dave Roberts is to find a mentor, and the Chamber of Commerce can help you find a mentor. They can help match you up, and so producer says, we need to wrap it up. Dave, it's been a great, wonderful interview, deep dive about entrepreneurship, your personal journey, your business, Telegistics. Tell our listeners again one more time how someone would get in touch with you if they wanted some of your sage advice and also wanted to learn more about the Renegade Capitalist or your company, Telegistics.
For the Renegade Capitalist, you go to renegadecapitalist.com. And again, we're looking to invest $25,000 in a winning business plan. So please contact us through that. If it's about Telegistics, you can contact Telegistics, telegistics.com, and all of our contact information is on there.
And by the way, when you have your, I don't know if you're going to do this like Shark Tank style, you know, when you get down to it, or it's just you and your angel investors in the back room, but we'd be really interested here at the Shrimp Tank to kind of hear maybe about, you know, the winning idea. Maybe we could do a show on that and invite you back.
Oh, that'd be great. We'd love to do that.
Yeah, and maybe we could feature your, you know, the guest who, you know, or your contest winner for that. So I want to thank you, JJ, again for hosting us here.
I'd like to
thank you, Dave Roberts, and special thanks to Catherine, our executive producer, for all the great work that she does.
Herding the cats,
getting us all lined up. Don't forget you can download a complete replay of the show at houston.shrimptankpodcast.com. You can find us on iTunes, and you can find us. I'm not going to be here back next week. I'm going on a cruise. No. We're back in 2 weeks, right? Back in 2 weeks. We'll see you then. Welcome to the Shrimp Tank. Doing big things, chasing big dreams. Yeah, it's all real, this life's all that it seems. All the chicks scream, all the dudes yell. This just what I do and I do it well. With the flow fresher than the new shoe smell. Going through hell, but homie keep going. You know the saying, you gon' reap what you sow in. So I don't chase girls, I just chase dreams. Play the same game, but we ain't in the same league. Running a campaign, roadie 2016. Like a phone to die, putting me in charge. I'm a G.
general. From the front, I'ma lead the charge. Like a federal, fell on my lap, never. Going hard as ever, the results match the effort. I've been feeling like a shark in a shrimp tank. Big fish, small pond in the shrimp tank. When it takes a swim, only option is to win. In the murky water, not a thought of giving in.